Hello, and welcome to the Brown Right Podcast. This podcast is all about what it means and what it takes to be successful in advertising when you're from a different ethnic or socio-economic background than the majority. Before we go any further, big thanks to Smith & Weston for producing the podcast. These guys are the best. If you need music for commercials, sound engineering, radio recording, podcasts, or absolutely anything to do with sound, keep the guys in mind. Smith & Weston, they are absolute legends. Our guest today is a proud Indigenous Australian director, screenwriter and producer. He studied at Darren Marlan College in Canberra and has been nominated as one of the top 25 creatives to watch by Sydney Morning Herald. He started directing in 2000 across telly ads, online campaigns, music videos, TV and film projects. He's won a massive pile of awards for his films, which include 2014's Hello Forever. He's also the CEO of Pluto Media, a content platform that combines stories, art, genres and behind-the-scenes artist discovery with offices in LA, Manila, Doha. And perhaps most appropriately for this podcast, he's right at the pointy end of the debate about Indigenous talent and representation in the creative industry. He is the one, the only, Peter Kirk.
How are you, Ant? Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you, mate. Pleasure to have you.
A couple of things.
Some mistakes in there?
No, not at all. 2009, I was nominated for one of the top creatives to watch, so that's a long time between drinks. So I certainly dine on it, out on it as much as I can.
Have you lived up to it?
I don't know. That's all debatable. But yeah, so thanks for having me, and this is going to be a wonderful, joyful ride, and who knows where we're going to end up. And if some people get offended to some of the passionate comments I say, that's okay. I'll take the blame. You can sit back and enjoy the ride.
Mate, as I said to you before we kicked off, we'll take it wherever you want, mate, and be as passionate and as sweary as you want to be. So, but anyway, maybe not sweary in this first bit, because I'm going to just start by saying, by asking, can you just give us a bit of info about your family background?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I grew up in Canberra. I was pretty good at football, so I won a football scholarship there for a couple of years. Turned out I wasn't as good as I thought I was. But my family, the Indigenous side, comes from a place called Culburra Beach, which is on the south coast. Lovely part of the world, and I miss it every single day. My God. And that's the Jirinja mob, and we're known as land and sea people, lake and sea people. And it's very bountiful, and it's got a lot of fish and a lot of reasons and meanings to live off the land.
And is that both your parents, your mum and your dad, were from those people, or was there different kind of different
people? My dad. Right. So just a little brief Indigenous history for everyone. Most people in Australia, when they think of Indigenous art or colours, they think of the red and the black and all that. There's actually green and blue. So if you see Indigenous art and there's blues and there's greens, that means that artist comes from the sea area.
And the red and the black, what's the other?
That's land. To be perfectly honest, as much as I love the Indigenous flag, it doesn't have the same emotion that looking at the sea and looking at blues and greens has for me.
Okay. And talk to me just a bit about, so coming from that people and then growing up in that environment, was that a big community, or were you kind of one of a few in that community?
No, massive community, right. Lots of people, lots of chat, lots of yarns, lots of exploring, lots of early mornings and late nights, because you'd be out all day riding a bike, fishing, surfing, prawning, playing in the rivers, playing on the beach, sunbaking, skate parks. It really was a wonderful, wonderful place to grow up, and I'm so glad my children have the exposure to this and not just Sydney.
Yeah, sounds beautiful, mate. Sounds idyllic. And how about sort of getting into the creative industry then? How did that come about?
In 2000, I was working in the corporate world, which seems like a lifetime away, for a company called Anderson Consulting, which is now called Accenture, and I believe they recently brought out the Monkees.
For a lot of money.
And I always wanted to be creative, and I always wanted to do things that were creative. And I'm sure this story resonates with a lot of creative people. However, I always felt that I had to follow what is considered a traditional path, which is go and get a job and get the 9-to-5 job. And I was on pretty good money, even for today's standards. And I just walked into the office one day and I couldn't do it anymore. And I always knew I wanted to direct films, TV, or be behind the camera. And then I worked up enough courage, and I promote, and I approached community TV back when Sydney had a community TV. And they ended up giving me a little job there, unpaid, and I worked on community TV from 2000 to 2006. I punched out a TV show every week for 6 years. Mm. Best thing I've ever done. Learned so much about pulling a TV show together, learned so much about resourcing, learned so much about camera angles, camera, and I had multiple jobs in between that. And I did pretty much everything. Worked in bottle shops, worked in call centres, ended up running one of the most famous bars in Sydney, which might be a fraction before your time, Q Bar, for 3 or 4 years, which was another experience, which was a wonderfully creative experience as well. And that's how pretty much the whole thing kicked off.
And then, so, Peter, when you first started doing the TV show, were you sort of noticeably the only Indigenous person of Indigenous background in those days, and how was that?
In all honesty, Ant, it's been challenging for as long as I can remember.
Right, okay.
Okay?
Tell us about that.
Because we come from a yarning culture, and a good friend of mine, Brad Cook, talks about this probably a bit better than
Sorry, mate. What do you mean by a yarning culture?
Yeah, so a yarning culture is we need to yarn, we need to talk, we need to... I have a wonderful saying that we need to hear the silences between the words. We need to listen to the silences between the words. So yarning is slang for talking and chatting, and Indigenous people are a chatting, yarning culture. We need to talk. We need to communicate. And working in a civilization where that's becoming less and less, and even back as far as I can remember, it was encouraged that you don't speak up, and if you do have an opinion, you got to kind of find the right way to say it at the right time, and it's just exceptionally difficult. Even now, it's probably become more difficult. Yeah. So, and that's I think conversations and yarning is a real good skill that every kid should learn and everyone should learn. However, that's becoming less and less, and it's certainly not as important as it was 20 years ago. So, it's from as long as I can remember, it's been a struggle to know when not to speak up because I was always taught to speak up.
Mm. So I'm imagining going back to those kind of the nightclub managing days and even to this very day, it sounds like it's kind of a clash of cultures or a clash of perspectives or ways of doing things. Has that ended up getting you in trouble or
consistently every day? Mm. And it's something that I haven't learnt. Now, whether I don't want to learn it, and that's something I have to work on, or it's something that I think we should all learn and come together and yarn and get in a room and have a chat. It's always a struggle, and I'm sure that you've experienced, or I'm sure people have said to you, "Oh, Kirky's a cool guy, but you just don't know what he's going to say." Right?
We're in an email culture as well these days,
exactly.
As well, where it's kind of a nicely crafted email.
I was taught, if you're going to write an email, write it, then walk away for 10 minutes, and then come back and check it, and then have another fucking look at it, and come back and think about, like, what the fuck? Just say it.
Yeah.
You know? Are we that sensitive now that we now have to censor everything that comes out of who we are as an entity and as a creative person and as a body, and other cultures don't? And are we so concerned that we have to say the right thing at the right time, and if we don't say the right thing at the right time, we mightn't do the right thing at the right time. If we don't do the right thing at the right time, then we won't win a big account or get the job done. I just find that extraordinary. Even recently, I was working in a role, and I was told in no uncertain terms to keep my head down and don't rock the boat and don't say anything, and she'll be right and everything will work out. And I just find that extraordinary, and I was never brought up that way. I was always brought up, speak your mind, be honest, be direct, listen to other people and listen to the silences between the words.
Mm, I mean, I'm a little bit torn here, right? I'll tell you why, because I hear you and I get, and also that's you, that's your culture. And, what are you going to do? You can't change someone's culture, nor should you. But in the terms of the the be direct, there's a grey area between speaking your mind and upsetting people. And I do think we're in a culture where, God, everyone's so easily upset and offended by bloody everything these days, to the point where no one can say anything because someone's going to be offended. So I'm not for that. But I am for, I don't know, being polite and being, not polite, but just being empathetic to, you know, to how people are going to take things. And is there a way that you can say things that, if you don't need to, doesn't upset people? But I don't know, I feel like the quirky way to just kind of go, you know, this is how it is, and
don't
that's
mistake
it.
Being direct for being rude. They're two completely separate, different things, okay? In my book.
Yeah.
Being direct is being direct, appreciating someone's time, energy, space, getting straight to the point while being polite as possible, other than just saying, well, I think this is rubbish. So, again, it's a balance, and it's again, it's a balance that I haven't always managed to get right. But you're right in that we've gone completely the other way. So maybe we need to understand that everyone's different, and we've all worked with different cultures, and we've all, my God, I've worked with cultures where you say the wrong thing and you're just wiped. They won't even talk to you, and you don't even know what you've done. So I think we kind of have to find a way to overcome these levels of fear and insecurity in the workplace where no one wants to say anything. I'm amazed stuff gets done, to be honest with you, where no one wants to say anything or do anything for fear of upsetting the other person. Where, again, going back to my culture, we're all one big mob. We're all there because we want to be there. So what's the greater purpose? To do good work and to punch out good work, or is it to not upset someone? I can't answer that.
Yeah. It reminds me of, there's a lady called Brené Brown who's sort of big in the speaking circuit. There's a great documentary on her, or great her talking sort of show on Netflix, and she recently was talking about feedback. And her take on it is, clear is kind, unclear is unkind. And sometimes I think, and maybe I'm guilty of this actually, when you try and couch things in over polite terms and you don't want to upset anyone, you just end up being unclear.
Absolutely.
And then everyone's going through rounds and rounds because no one knows what you actually want. The kindest thing is to be really clear and
absolutely
say, this is how it is. Yeah. And can you sort of make
people's,
it like that?
You know, respect people's time. Mm. I'm a film director, as you said at the top of this interview. And like all film directors, I started out directing no budget film clips and no budget short films. And I was known for my abruptness on set. I don't have that anymore anyway. But I was known for my abruptness on set, and I was known for driving a very fast set. And the reason I did that is no one's getting paid. Let's not be there for 18 hours. Let's be there as quick as we can get there. Mm. Appreciate people's time so that we get the shot in the can, and then we move on with our day, because you don't want people there getting not getting a cent of money and sitting around for 24, 26, 27 hours going, oh, well, to me, that's more disrespectful than trying to keep a fast set going. And don't mistake for being direct for being rude. And your reaction's very, very common. It's like, well, if I hear the word direct, I automatically hear, oh, well, that direct could be rude. And I think it's the wrong way to look at things. So I think being direct is saying, look, I'm going to just, I really appreciate that we've come together to have a yarn. So let's just be straight up with each other. What's happening? What's going on? Rather than the feedback sandwich, something good, something bad, and then something finished with something good, you know?
I think what it is, Kirky, is because your culture and my culture are so different, because I'm British in a way. Part of me is very British, and the British way is to have feedback sandwich and loads of compliment and loads of nice things. And like, let's try and shy away from just getting to the fucking point. Well, we always to say, fuck that, let's just...
And meanwhile, you're trying to take over the world. So, you know, jolly good sick there, chap. We'll just invade... We'll invade this other country for a minute, so all good.
In a polite way.
Can
we just spin back, before we actually get, because I do want to get into the creative side of things and really sort of explore your career and all of those things, but just while we're on the upbringing and the background and stuff, I want this chat to be a celebration as well, by the way, not a big negative kind of thing, but I do want to talk about racism for a bit. And you sort of mentioned things were hard and there's a clash of cultures and so on. How was that sort of growing up before you even got into the workforce? Was there racism down there in Canberra?
Australia does a particular style of racism better than any other country, and I call it compartmental racism. And I just have a word. That's the word I've and it's almost like we feel your pain, but don't come onto our street. We feel your pain, but don't move next door to us. We feel your pain, but don't share a table with us. I never experience any vitriolic abuse or any of that kind of. I never did, and that's not the Aussie style. The Aussie style is to kind of push it into the background, and when you want to have a yarn and talk about it, it's like, oh, well, we don't need to have these conversations. Well, we fucking do, right? For Australia to grow as a country, we need to have tough, hard conversations about who the fuck we are, because right now, no one knows. No one. And again, I don't want to go negative with this, but, you know, the rates of suicide in Indigenous culture, particularly around youth, despair, alcoholism, depression, domestic violence in Indigenous communities out in country Australia is appalling. Yet, all we hear about through the media is Me Too. All we hear about is someone's outraged that someone's wearing a bikini or whatever. If this was any other country, and I filmed a lot around other countries, you do hear about it consistently a lot more. Australia does racism really well. We don't really confront racism. We don't confront anything. We kind of compartmentalize it, so it's not really. We don't want to be reminded of it.
Neatly tucked away.
Yeah, we don't want to be reminded of it. And that's one thing the UK did well. And I believe it was Margaret Thatcher that did this.
Don't start bigging up Margaret Thatcher on this show, please, Kirkie.
If I'm wrong, I stand corrected. One of your prime ministers at some point made a decision to build the support housing in all your different suburbs in London. Mm. I believe that had a really positive impact on the creativity and the English people that came out of London, because you got to see despair and poverty quite regularly. On your way to work, you might drive past it, you might walk past. We don't see it here. So if I say to you, if I say to anyone, we're not perfect. Once you pull back the covers of Australia, it's, believe me, they want to snap them shut again. They're happy to have the yarn, they're happy to have the chat, but do they want to really get down and dirty and do something meaningful and real about it?
The hard work.
That's another reason, as a side note, that's another reason why I think in the late 90s some wonderful artists came out of London, because I think there was a lot of mixing of cultures and clashing of cultures, and, you know, rich and poor kind of had to kind of try and find a way to work together. We don't have that here. We've got everything compartmentalised and neat and safe and strong. Even tonight, if we were to go home, walk home, you're not going to walk past too many poor Indigenous families that are living on the street or living in a rundown house, because no one wants to see it in Australia. And that is the constant battle that I face every single day when I meet with an ad agency and say, you need to do this. And I'm talking drop a bit of money to put some real meaningful pathways in place. They're like, well, we don't actually need to do it. We're still winning accounts and we're still doing this and we're still, you know, I feel you and I love it, but I'm still going to put a couple of grand or 20 grand into putting, you know, applying for an award. Our priorities are not where they need to be right now as a nation. And it's a long, long conversation that needs to happen for everyone to get into a room. And this is what I strongly believe, and just talk about, okay, what the fuck do we need to do to come together to get to the next level? Because right now, something's broken.
want to sort of specifically get into what agencies can be doing, should be doing, what they're not doing, all of those things. But just sticking with the racism thing for a second, because I wanted to run something by you that's been troubling me a bit on this. I'm a massive fan of the Smiths. The Smiths have kind of been the soundtrack to my teenage years. Always been a fan of the Smiths. About 20 years ago, Morrissey, the lead singer of the Smiths, began to come out with some troubling lyrics, statements, interviews that verging on the racist. And over the years, those statements have become more and more troubling, to the point where I can't have any truck with this guy. Mm. He's actually a tool, as far as I'm concerned. But he said something the other day that really gave me pause for thought in an interview where he got accused of being racist. And he said this, I just want to get your reaction to it. He said, diversity can't possibly be a strength if everyone has ideas that will never correspond. Everyone ultimately prefers their own race. Does that make everyone racist? Now, that idea that everyone prefers their own race, that I found that super troubling, because I don't. I sort of see people. Do you think there's some truth in that?
I think everyone prefers what they know is probably I don't think everyone prefers their own race. I mean, God.
That's kind of weird and creepy,
isn't
it? No,
that's a weird comment. Morrissey's showing his age there. I think everyone prefers what they know and
are comfortable with.
And are comfortable with what they know. And maybe, I can't speak on behalf of him, but maybe that's what he was trying to say. Mm. I find the first sentence more intriguing. Can you just repeat the first sentence again?
Diversity can't possibly be a strength if everyone has ideas that will never correspond.
Right, yeah. And he's 100% right.
Is he?
Yeah, so what I believe he's trying to say is that diversity means that if you get 10 different people in a room, you're not going to get a good idea. You're going to get 10 different opinions, and I disagree with that.
Because surely there's a grey area there where, yes, you've got a committee and you've got a weaker idea that's because it's come together from all those things, but surely there's an argument that having lots of different opinions and thoughts and backgrounds will make ideas and executions richer.
Well, a good leader should do that. And you were a very senior creative director and you had lots of creative people to report it to you. And I'm sure half of your job was managing those different personalities, egos, motivators, et cetera,
right,
et cetera.
That's the job of a good leader.
And a good leader should manage different diverse groups of people to get a really good result. Again, are we doing that well in Australia? Not at all. Is there a desire to do that well in Australia? Probably not, because it's seen as too hard. I don't want to offend someone. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I've had the amount of times that a senior ad person has said to me, well, we haven't started because I don't want to do the wrong thing. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Do something.
Do something. Have a yarn. Anyway.
All right, let's get on to the next question. When I first came here to Australia, and this is many years ago, I've been here about 6 or 7 years now, but when I first came, it was about 20, 25 years ago. Naively, I now realise I thought there'd be lots of Indigenous people everywhere, and I'd be chatting to them and yarning, as you say, and being mates with all these Indigenous people, and then they'd be in the advertising industry and I'd be working alongside them. I quickly realised that, looking around, I was like, hang on, what the fuck? Where are they? How was it for you, sort of having your ambitions to be part of this industry when you were growing up and you were starting out in the creative world, looking around? Did you see any Indigenous role models, or did you sort of think, oh, shit, there aren't any, I'm a man alone, or how was that?
There's two answers to that really good question. That's a really good question. First and foremost, I came up through the film industry, and yes, the film industry is a lot more diverse in the ad game. There's... particularly some of the big government-funded film schools are aware of this and doing something about it. Then when I transitioned into agency land, if I had known now what I was in for, I wouldn't have done it. It's just been too much of a struggle in regards to being so different and not being able to find people or someone that I felt like I had a real connection with. There's a vast difference between film people and agency people. The competitiveness is not there. I'm not saying it's the film game's not competitive. It is, but the competitiveness is not there as much as it is in the ad game. Mm. Also, the people that work in the ad game generally come from the same kind of demographic for both male and female in Australia.
Do you mean sort of socio-economic?
Yeah, socio-economic, suburbs. I know the stat. The average person that works in the ad game in Sydney is 27, white male, went to a private school and lives in the eastern suburbs and rides a moped. And it's pretty much the same in Melbourne, except they live in St Kilda and Paran or one of the other rich suburbs. The agency land has a self-perpetuating recruitment system where the people that end up working there are the same people that started out as a junior and go through, or they hire someone in, and they don't really think out. They don't think that they need to make the effort to go and connect, because often, as you know, the environments are very busy. They're very KPIs are very, very rigid. You're either going after account, winning account, or a managing account. That means everything's down to its last cent. I'm sure there's Excel spreadsheets flying around everywhere, God forbid. So do they have the resources at it to chuck at it, to turn around and say, we need to invest in this to really change the status quo? Or do they just go after the status quo? Some agencies do want to change the status quo. But again, when the heat's on and you turn around and say, this is a commitment, this is something that you really need to do, and it's going to cost you XYZ amount of money in this amount of time, three quarters of them, you don't hear from them again.
In my role, or my roles over the last few years, I've seen a desire and a push for a lot more female creatives to be hired. You know, there's a definite drive to hire more female creatives, more female creative leaders, to put a spotlight on those females and just really, you know, sort out this gender thing where it's just male dominated. And, you know, I don't know, we're not there yet, clearly, but that feels like that particular area is being addressed. Maybe not fast enough, but there's something happening in that. It's probably not the same for the topic of people's ethnic background, and particularly for Indigenous backgrounds, but there's been some change.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But how do you measure change?
How long have we got?
Exactly.
How many years have we got for things to get to where we want to get to?
Yeah, exactly. And I can only talk on my behalf. I mean, not a day goes by where I don't see on one of those ridiculous social media channels, which we all have, and I'll just say LinkedIn, where someone hasn't won an award or talking about this, or, you know, we've just gone through award season. If I see another fucking agency that's won a Khan award, oh, how special, how talented, blah, blah, fucking blah, as opposed to someone that's actually gone out and said, we have actually sat down and had a yarn and started up an Indigenous scholarship program, or want to, there's a massive, massive difference. The agency land is still stuck in the 1980s, putting their measurings. And I had a really good chat today with another fella, and we both had a really good chat about this. And until agency land can put some pure hard data and numbers on the value of hiring everyone from all different walks of life, and saying you are going to make this much money in return, then things are going to change at a pretty slow rate. Agency still sees awards as the main thing and the biggest driver and the biggest winner and you know, fucking hell, another calm line.
That makes me think there was an agency network a couple of years back who said, we're not going to enter Cannes this year. We're going to take all our money and use it for something else. Maybe that's the way forward. Maybe a big network agency could say, we're going to be out for a year. Yeah. We're going to spend it on Indigenous Reconciliation Plan.
Let's see if the CEO and the MD
and the ECD are in agreement.
And the ECD are in agreement on that because at some level, somehow, and you would actually have a better handle on this than me, somehow people in agency land equate winning an award
to picking up more work. And you and I both know there is no correlation between them between both of them. Between both of them. But, you know, they still think it's a wonderful thing, and we're going to chuck a little bit of money at winning an award so we can put it on our mantelpiece.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not. We've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I'm not anti-award awards. I think they can be really good. They can be inspiration, stimulation. They can help us all raise our standards, all of those things. So I don't see it as an either-or, but I do think they're very expensive. They do. People spend a lot of money on awards.
I'm not anti-awards either, not by a long shot. Completely agree with everything you're saying. I'm saying that can't be and shouldn't be your only measuring tool for success for an agency. And until that changes, and I don't believe the big agencies want to change that right now, even though they say they will, it's still going to be a struggle. But there has been improvement and there has been steps. It's just some days you want to tear your hair out.
And can we go back specifically to the whole gender equality and ethnic diversity and all those things? Like I said, Me Too's been a big movement, Time's Up, a lot of things that the industry seem to be addressing, whether they're sort of addressing them well or not, you know, or well enough, I don't know, but there's certainly been a bit of change. Do you feel a bit frustrated that some issues are being addressed, whereas this really important issue of Indigenous representation maybe not being given enough of a focus? Why is that one being sorted and not this one?
I'm glad Me Too, and I'm glad gender, and I'm really happy that that's being spoken about and that's been put on the table. And I generally am. I kind of get the impression that people... It's almost like, well, we've just gone through this battle with the whole Me Too. We've just gone through this battle with the whole gender equality and, you know, we're just too exhausted to have another chat. That's kind of the impression I get from time to time. So there are some really talented people out there who really push for this, and I'll probably give them a blast a bit further on your podcast. But, yeah, I don't know why we haven't done more to address Indigenous cultures, lack of representation in Indigenous culture in the same amount of time we did to address more diversity of women at senior level and in the creative side. And before everyone starts sending you an email, and I'm not talking about the end result, I'm talking about the dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, like the awards thing, I don't think it's an either or. I think they're all conversations that we should be having and all things that we should be looking for solutions for. It just strikes me, you said to me a couple of times, Peter, my people are the oldest, most natural storytellers on the planet. And just ironically, maybe, so it's not that funny, but maybe ironic that over the last 5 years, the ad industry has been started to enjoy calling ourselves storytellers. That seems to be a thing that's like, we're not creatives, we're not ad men, we're ad women, we are storytellers now. Yeah. So surely there should be some room at the table for real storytellers.
Yeah, I mean, how do you define a story, I suppose, is the million-dollar question. It's cool to call yourself a storyteller. You said I was a film director. I actually never called myself a film director until I actually directed my first feature film, and I did a stack load of stuff before that. But it's only after I directed Hello Forever was I comfortable in calling myself a storyteller. So maybe that's, you know, what is a storyteller? And you're right, we are the oldest storytellers, and that goes back to our yarning culture and sitting around the campfire and talking and always listening to the silence between the words and having a yarn, and maybe that's what could go into agency land to help that environment a bit more, to stand up and talk and share and give and receive, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I wanted to mention is another conversation we've had in the past, which is around, you do a lot of work and have a lot of conversations with agencies, CEOs and ECDs and so on, and trying to encourage and cajole and twist arms to get people to open the doors to Indigenous talent, and I know one of the things you've started thinking about a lot in the conversations you've been having are around speaking to brands and organisations, and the pressure that's coming from brands to actually talk to their agencies to say, look, actually we want you to do this, we need you to do this, we want to work with agencies that have got this kind of thing or work in this kind of way. We've had a chat in the past about that that Beyonce issue a couple of years ago with, I think it was Reebok, where she, I think Reebok were pitching for Beyonce to be their ambassador. Like, she sat for a whole pitch with Reebok in a room full of, you know, middle-aged white guys, and right at the end of the at the end of the presentation, she just kind of got up and walked out and said, "Look, nobody in this room reflects my background, my skin colour, where I'm from, and what I want to do, and so I'm out." It just felt like such a miss from the agency to not fill that meeting with a diverse people from diverse backgrounds. So I think there is pressure coming from all sorts of places. I guess the question is, do you think there's enough pressure coming from the brand side of things versus agencies or, you know, people like you that are putting pressure on?
Really good question. I think there's pressure coming from the federal government. Well, I know there's pressure coming from the federal government. There's a desire for brands to do it. And I must say, I do find brands willing to sit down and really have a good hard yarn about it more than agencies do. Yes, no one's worked out how to do it yet, and that's the challenge that I find and that I've been through. Kind of, if you say to an agency, "Listen, let's pick up hypothetically speaking, let's pick up one of your own agencies, Havas." So Havas, Woolies. Havas is working with Woolies on the creative account, and if Woolies turn around and say to Havas, "By 2022." If you don't have 3% of your population Indigenous, you're going to lose the account. Now, that sounds wonderful, but does that mean Havas just go and hire three people and put them in chairs and say, "Great, we've hit that target," or do they go and invest in the pathways and they really take the time and they really, really measure and monitor it and look at the KPIs and et cetera, et cetera? And then who manages that? Does the brand manager manage that? Does the CMO manage that? Does the CSR manage that? And who's making sure that it's being checked? Brands want to do this. I think it needs to be discussed how and why it can be rolled out in a way that's compliant and attainable. That's my answer.
And is that... I mean, if the world says, the industry says, "Okay, Peter, we're going to do it your way," what's the Peter Kirk way? Is it quotas? Is it right from tomorrow we need X percent? Or what's the...
It's about equality of opportunity.
Okay.
And that means that every agency should be doing their own reconciliation action plan as well as setting up their own Indigenous scholarship program. Okay. And every agency's got to have a different one because every agency's different.
Mm. So let's just unpack that a bit, because that was going to be the next question. What should every creative agency do tomorrow?
Start looking at how they can set up their own Indigenous scholarships. So here's the thing, Ant, and this is the constant question I get asked. The most common question I get asked from agency land is this, and it is absolutely an absurd question once you start thinking about it. "Kirgi, where are all the Indigenous people?" Okay? There are so many. There are a stack of Indigenous people. Organisations, groups, universities, support structures. In Sydney alone, there's a big National Centre for Indigenous, 10-minute walk from here. Okay, a lot of these kids want to go into agency land because they see it as glamorous. Most people do. I mean, how many times have you been? "Oh, what a cool industry you work in." Okay.
I've seen the reality as right, well. So yeah. It's not always glamorous.
Well, that's
glamorous,
fine. They'll learn that as well. But my point is, there are no shortage of Indigenous kids and adults that want to at least get a taste of it. Now, does that mean that agency land starts knocking on the door? Of course, but they have to demonstrate that they've gone on their own individual journey. They have to at least start being aware of the differences in the cultures of Western world and Indigenous culture. And I'm a classic example of that. So if an agency was to turn around and say, "Well, we want to start working with Indigenous people," the first question I would ask them is, have you thought about and do you have an Indigenous scholarship program in place? Most commonly, I'm going to get told no. Then I'm going to ask, do you have a reconciliation action plan in place? Most commonly, I'm going to get told no. And there's no point having that conversation because unless you start reading up on the culture.
Yeah, but hang on. But help us. Help the industry. So the answer's no to those two questions. Mm-hmm. But we want to. Can you help us, Kirky?
Yeah, then we get in a room.
Can we do it?
Yeah,
what is it going to take? How can you make it happen for us? Can you
absolutely.
Tell us what we need to do?
Yeah, we get in a room and we have a yarn and we work out a strategy on how to roll it out and move forward, just like anything.
And then because those indigenous groups that are around, as we've sort of discussed with a bunch of other people on this podcast in the past, they're different worlds. The world of advertising is quite a middle class eastern suburbs kind of world, and these worlds just don't collide much or enough. How do people kind of help, you know, help advertising reach out to that world and bring that world into advertising?
The reaching out is the easy part. It's the easiest part out of all of this. It's the validation and the demonstrating of what you want to do is real and tangible. So what have you done regarding your journey as an organisation or as a company to start being aware of Indigenous culture? So what do you know or are you aware of even the land that you're on? I'm not being a militant or Nazi about this. I'm saying that most agencies already have an internship program, I believe. I'm sure they do, right? And that's wonderful, and that would be their source of recruitment, and that would be the entry point into agency land, a source of talent. To flip that over and to create your own bespoke model for an Indigenous scholarship program and whatever the entry points are, however you do that, that's quite easy to do. You just need to get in a room, have an honest conversation, work out what is our Indigenous scholarship program stand for, what are the pillars, where are we going to take these people, what are the KPIs, who's going to be the mentor, do we write different policy for this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When that's done or when that started, I'll take the agencies down and introduce them to National Centre for Indigenous Excellence, NASCAR, and all the big organisations. That's easy. I'll set up a meeting. That's the easy part. Do agencies want to actually get in a room for a full day and talk about, okay, where are we? Where do we want to go? What do we need to learn as a culture and as a company? And do we have the time to actually go on this journey of realizing, well, you know what? Our way of working, i.e. headphones on, everyone staring at their computer, can hear a pin drop, is not going to work for an Indigenous kid who's 24 years of age, that's creative and doesn't really know how to control his passion and creativity or her, so, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and put them in a computer and they're going to go, you're going to go, great, we're diverse, yay, and 30 emails coming to this person every single day and accept a meeting request and then accept another one and blah, 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 that's going to last 2 weeks, okay? So how do we shape this differently to accommodate a culture that is known to be a lot more of a talking culture, okay? That's what agencies need to do.
Yeah, but you've now gone from, or in my mind, this conversation's gone from how can we open the doors to hire a couple more Indigenous kids, get them in the front door, and form a scholarship program or whatever it may be to get people in the front door, which seems doable, to now the other side of this conversation is to change an entire culture of an agency. How do we do that?
I'm not saying you change a whole entire culture. I'm saying that you have to be aware that there's differences. And the only way you can be aware that there's difference is by sitting in a room and having an honest yarn. I'm not saying, I would never ask any agency to change their culture. I'd never ask an Indigenous person to change their culture. They have to meet in the middle. Both people have to change a bit, of course. Mm. But I'm saying that you have to be honest and be honest about agency culture and Indigenous culture. And I know both very, very well, and they're miles apart. Where agency culture is very status driven. It's important what clothes we wear. It's important we're wearing the right brand of sneakers. It's important we've got the latest phone. It's important that, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. Indigenous kid couldn't care less about that. Couldn't give a shit.
How do you bridge that?
That's what divide. The Indigenous scholarship's all about, to get into a room and say, okay, how do we bridge that gap? Does that mean instead of doing a weekly whip, we do 3 whips a week with this kid? Does that mean instead of sitting and bringing him into a room like we are, 4 walls, and giving them a feedback session, we don't do that.
we actually write in our policy that we take them for a walk around the block and get outside and see the nature and then have a yarn then. How do you think you're going? Blah, 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 blah. Little things that can make a world of difference to, for a culture that can come in and go, oh, actually, yeah, they are aware. Do you, as an agency, do you go on your own journey and understand why we do an acknowledgement of country and a welcome to country? Or who can do a welcome to country? Do you go on your own journey as an agency and understand why men can play the didgeridoo and women can't? Do you understand, as I said at the top, as I mentioned before about the blues and the greens and the reds and the browns, so that when a young kid starts, at least they can see there's a bit of an effort rather than there's your desk, there's your chair, yay, we're diverse, good luck.
Box ticked. I mean, this gets me a bit more excited because I much more, the idea resonates with me much more about getting an agency culture to change versus just getting an individual to change. If we just want to bring in one Indigenous person and then get them to act like everyone else that's not from their culture, that feels like that's either not going to work,
or
even if they did last, is that the right thing?
They're not going to last.
Versus if you brought that person or those people in and then got the agency to behave in a way that maybe is doable, get the agency to change.
Let's drill down with that a bit further. So you said to me 5 minutes ago, we're the oldest storytellers on the planet, and we are, right? So do you want to change the culture of the oldest storytellers on the planet and therefore maybe restrict and suppress that storytelling natural ability to fit in with a culture? Or do you want to say, okay, well, you guys are the oldest storytellers on the planet, so we need to actually shift our thinking a little bit around you guys so that we can tap into this storytelling ability that's inherent in pretty much every single Indigenous kid? I can't answer that. I'm not an MD or a CEO of an agency.
But I'm an ECD or a CD or whatever you want to call it, and I want creativity. I want ideas. I want people to bring me ideas that I can sort of work with them and shape, and but I need those ideas kind of on tap all the time. I want lots of ideas and the right ideas and all of that. Can the Indigenous scholars guarantee that, or is it going to be I needed something on this brief and it didn't do anything because it was on a different brief, or it didn't, you know, there's a way of working. It's like a factory in an agency, you know. There are idea factories, and you know, the brief goes in and ideas get pumped out and you get the best idea creators to sort of come in and they give you the best ideas. Is there a way that Indigenous kids can work in this way? Or is it, or do we have to change that?
No, of course. In fact, they would love that way to work, to sit around a table and come up with ideas and share ideas and be heard and be listened and listen to people and feel like they're part of a team. I was listening to a podcast, and I completely forget the name of the podcast. Sebastian Junger was talking about, he wrote a book called Tribe, and he was talking about what's happened in society now is the fracturing of society, in that no one feels like they're part of something anymore. And he talked about the Indigenous culture a lot in America, right, because he's obviously American. And the most important thing, in my opinion, you can do to any Indigenous person is make them feel like they're part of something. Mm. And if they're part of something and at the table and know that they're there because their talents got them there, and know that they're there because their passions got them there, not because you're ticking a box, encouraging them to speak up and say, look, share us your ideas. What do you think of that? What do you think of this? I can guarantee they will deliver idea after idea after idea after idea. But to get them to that table requires a little bit more work and a little bit more mind adjustment, where people have to turn around and say to themselves, well, yes, we have to change a little bit about our culture. Yeah, I have pretty much walked into every single agency in Sydney at some point in the last couple of years. I'm just thinking of and none of those agencies have an Indigenous flag in the foyer. To go out and buy Indigenous flags is going to cost you $40.
Mm. Talk to us about that. Is that a big deal? It is a big deal because you've mentioned it. Why is that important? I get why it's important, but is that something that people should do?
It's something they don't have to do it, but it shows that they're aware of it. You know, it demonstrates two things. It demonstrates the lack of awareness and the insular nature of agency land, and it actually demonstrates that
If it's there, it demonstrates that, well, at least I've thought about this. And I mentioned the word validation before. The one of the most important things you can do to Indigenous communities, show that you're genuine, or at least want to show that you're genuine.
Yeah.
Don't mistake the end result as the journey. The journey is the most important thing in this. And maybe that's where people are going. Maybe people think, well, this is all too hard. I mean, I don't want to fucking get in a room for a fucking day and talk about Indigenous people. You know, I've got some clients to go see, and I'm a brand manager, and I've got the social media stats to look at, and I've got to deliver this, and I've got to deliver that. I don't want to do this. So my thing is, you kind of have to do it because it's going to make you a better operator. Don't. Unfortunately, we've got fixated with the end result. It's kind of the journey, which is for you to learn more about Indigenous culture. You kind of got to look at the journey, and that journey might be a simple thing like going out and buying an Indigenous flag and putting it in reception so that every single staff member that shows up to work at least sees an Indigenous flag and thinks to themselves, oh, well, these guys are pretty fucking cool. At least, hey, I've got an Indigenous flag. Well, at least, oh, well, that's good to see. You know, and there's multiple studies done around all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we both spoke at the change the ratio thing a couple of months ago, and I remember someone spoke there. I think she was she was a lady from IBM. She was talking about same-sex representation and the rainbow flag. Mm. And it didn't really occur to me, but she just said it's really important for us to have rainbow flags everywhere. You know, sometimes it's a bit cheesy, rainbow pens and rainbow email signatures. And it just says we care, you know, we're there. But one thing that does worry me, though, is we've got a flag up in the reception, job done. That flag's got to be up there and that's got to be an indicator that we've got that there and that's a commitment that we're going to do, you know, whatever it is, the things you've talked about.
I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think having a flag in reception should and could remind you that you have to do more.
Mm.
But until I went and met with an agency last year. Again, I went and met with an agency last year, and they said to me, "Oh, we've got a reconciliation action plan." I'm like, "Well, you don't have you've done that, great, but you don't have an Indigenous flag in your reception." And they said, "But we've got a reconciliation action plan." And I'm like, "Oh God, okay, great, good, thanks."
I feel like you're being unfair, though, Pete. Because they're trying. If they've got a reconciliation action plan, that's more than probably, I don't know, 90% of other agencies have got. I've worked at agencies that have talked about it and looked into it and started doing it.
Yeah, maybe
it's not a simple thing to do, but you know, if they've got it, fair play.
Maybe I am. But if you've done a reconciliation action plan and one of your action items out of the reconciliation action plan is not to put an Indigenous flag in reception.
Surely it's number one on the list, isn't it? I don't know.
You'd hope so. Yeah. Then it ain't a fucking reconciliation action plan. It's a piece of, so my point is, you know, the rap that they've done is probably more fluff than the flag ever could have been, is what I'm trying to say. And I don't want to get into the whole, where do you draw the line regarding what's measurable and what's not measurable? Agencies can start doing some very, very small things now that could make a massive difference. What I don't understand, Ant, and what pisses me off no end, is how come we can mobilise so strongly for the same-sex marriage, vote yes, right, and pretty much every agency had something about it in reception. Coke dropped a pretty big media campaign around it, yet we can't seem to mobilise for First Nation people in this country. So that's where I struggle mentally. How the fuck can we do this, yet we can't do it for our First Nations people? And I actually asked the senior guy at Coke when all this was came out, and I said to him, I won't mention his name, mate, surely to God doing the big vote yes campaign didn't sell you more units of Coke. And he said, no, Kirky, no, not at all. But we actually all sat in a room and realised it would have cost us more money if we didn't do it.
Yeah, but I mean, I just don't see them as mutually exclusive. I think we should be doing that. That's my point.
You know, that's my point.
It was so far behind. It was so ridiculous. We had to have that vote and we had to get this sodding thing done.
Sure,
it was ridiculous.
But
and we probably have to do this as well, you know.
But why was it so easy to do that for agencies and for agencies to do that, then do even less for the Indigenous community. I don't understand. I honestly don't understand.
But this is a question more than a statement or an opinion. The issues around the First Nation people, are they just not more of a provocative, hard to agree on, political hot potatoes? It's hard to get involved without falling out with people. It's the same-sex thing. There was a moment in time where everyone kind of went, yeah, no, we've got to do this. This is ridiculous.
It galvanised everyone. You're right.
Is it harder to... I don't know. I sense things changing in society. I've not seen the Adam Goods movie yet. I don't know if you've seen it, the doco. I hear that it kind of really does pull some of these arguments together and people sort of go, God, we really need to change.
Don't get me wrong. First and foremost, I'm in here talking to you right now about this subject, which is a wonderful thing. There has been some wonderful people out there really pushing for this, and it would be remiss that I didn't acknowledge some of the great work from the Communications Council in setting up the Indigenous Scholarship Program, some of the great people like yourself, Mossy, Ostrom. Super cool, creative people that really, really want to make a difference. There's... Matt Malouish, Fiona Chilcrot, John Burden. My point is, I don't want us to pat ourselves on the back.
I don't think I should be mentioned among them. I've done kind of
nothing. Well, the fact that we're here having a yarn about it says
a lot.
Let's
get it on the table, yeah.
Yeah, that's all I want. Let's get it on the table and let's have an honest yarn about what we can do to make an industry that I actually love, which... and bites me on the ass sometimes, love better, and a race of people that I love better as well, because there's just this disconnect, and it ain't easy to try and get two people to the table, let me tell you.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? It's tough trying to, on one hand, you want to move forward, and on the other hand, you have to say, bloody hell, why are things like this? Did you see that show on Netflix called When They See Us? Have you seen that?
No.
It's a great documentary about this, back in the late 60s or early 70s, these four or five black kids got picked up in Central Park.
I watched the original doco.
Yeah. Female jogger got murdered. They were completely innocent. They got picked up and wrongly, mistakenly coerced them to give them these admissions that they'd done it. Thrown in jail for 14 years, horrendous. Kids, completely innocent, thrown in jail for 14 years, and finally someone, the real perpetrator, admitted it and they got let out, but by that time they'd done 14 years. And there was a brilliant, the show's brilliant, should watch it, it's great, but there's a great Oprah Winfrey documentary about it where they bring out the kids who played the actors who played the parts, and then the real guys who'd done this time and it happened to them. And some of them, out of the five or six of them, a couple of them were just so angry and so bitter and twisted because they've just done 14 years and had their lives fucked by this horrible, evil misjustice and just couldn't let it go. And then there were a couple of them who were like, fuck, that's happened. We've got to change this thing. We can't let it happen again. We've got to start a movement. We've got to work with Oprah. We've got to move things forward. We've got to be positive. And I can kind of see both sides. I can see that, fuck, how can you let things go when someone's done that to you and fucked your life and your people? But I can also think, we've got to move on and find a way to move forward. It's hard.
Got to find a way to move forward. I have a particular issue with the way Indigenous people are portrayed by the Australian media and the way it's always been portrayed. We're not told about some of the wonderful, when your mob came here, the English came here, and we're constantly told that they came here and they wiped out the Aboriginals, right? And it's actually not true. There was some wonderful... First and foremost, there's records showing that the British people and the Aboriginal people lived side by side, and the Aboriginal people helped the English people with... So we don't hear about that too much. But what we also don't hear about is some of the guerrilla warfare that went on and some of the tactics used by some of the Indigenous leaders in fighting the British, which is still being used today. And I teach my kids, you're no victim. You're only a victim if you want to be a victim. Saying that, I live in Sydney and we've got a lot here at our disposal, and we live in a very affluent society. I think that would be a different environment if I lived out with the mob out west and out in some far, far area with depression and poverty and suicide and disease and alcoholism and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that's where you're going. Maybe there's this level of... I don't know it. I don't know Indigenous people. It's some world that I don't see. I don't have any mates that are Aboriginal, you know. So maybe, not my fucking problem. I care, you know. I want to show, I care. I'll give you the time of the day and we'll have a yarn and a cup of coffee, but I don't really have any mates. And I'll get in my car and I'll go to my little nice little house with a big backyard and a swimming pool and a dog and a couple of kids and a wife. And I met with an Indigenous person today called Peter Kirk, and I showed him that I cared. But tomorrow I'll get another set of bills in, and I've got to pay my private school tuition fees for my kids, and I've got another investment property that I want to buy. And yeah, it's just all a bit too hard, so fuck it. I'm not everyone's like that, and I'm not trying to be negative either. I'm not deliberately trying to say that it's fucked. It's not, and I must stress
give us some
not.
Positivity. Come on,
I
give
must
us some,
stress that
give
it's
some,
not.
Yeah, give us some.
I just think that we as a nation need to come together, and I don't know how to do that. So there is a lot of positivity. We've got our first little batch of award school kids, Indigenous award school kids next, which I believe, hopefully, you marked. That's on the 31st.
Yeah, I'm going to that. But I know that specifically is something you work really hard on.
Yeah, so myself and Tony Hale from the Comms Council, we worked, and there was a lot. That was a learning process, and that was wonderful. So I'm not here to be negative. I'm here to point out that I hope agencies get on board. I want them to get on board. And if you're going to get on board, please understand it's a commitment. That's what I'm trying to say. And
do something meaningful.
Do something meaningful rather than just say, we're diverse. And to me, there's nothing worse than just saying, yeah, we're diverse. And even before changing the ratio, I was working in a company, and I went up to quite a well-known person in the industry, and I said to her, are you coming to changing the ratio? And her answer was, well, we've got three Aboriginal people that work here. We're diverse. fucking hell. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the box is ticked.
Box is ticked. Move on. Rather than have a real yarn about, okay, Kirky, well, tell me about where your mob's from, which is how you started the conversation, which is perfect. What about your mob? Where are they from? Why are they land and sea people? Okay, tell me about, So there was none of that. And there's been a lot of talk and a lot of dialogue around Adam Goods and all that. And, I just hope it keeps going. And I'm pleased to see and I so much want to have these real hard conversations. And no one's perfect. I'm not. No one's, God, you know, we all fuck up. But I think we need to try.
It's been, we're going to finish up quite soon, right? It has been quite intense. It's been quite an intense conversation, probably the most intense one.
I didn't mean it to be intense.
And I did say we're going to kind of not be too negative, but
I didn't mean it to be intense.
I know, but how do you talk about a race of people who are affected by these, alcoholism, drug, all the things you mentioned.
And
there's babies
being born with syphilis.
How do we talk about that without the answers? Without being able to go, and the answer is this, because I haven't got it. I definitely haven't got it.
I mean, this is going back to one of your original questions. Where have you struggled? Where I have struggled is not knowing when to shut the fuck up. Because do people want to hear this? This might, half your listeners might tune out halfway and go, I just don't want to hear a fucking another story about this people. And I'm trying to say, well, I think we all need to be a bit honest where everyone comes from. We keep hearing this phrase about equality of outcomes. What the fuck does that mean, equality of outcomes? We should be talking about equality of opportunity. We live in the Commonwealth of Australia. Commonwealth. That's where it's come from. Your mob brought that dialogue here. Yeah. Commonwealth for everyone. Yet do we have equality of opportunity? And this, you said before you came up through the Saints and all that. And a lot of these bands came out of England in that period because they saw injustice. Mm. And they wanted to sing about injustice. And there was a lot of stuff that came out of the UK in that period of time because people weren't getting a fair go.
Yep.
So maybe this is my path.
Okay. I mean...
You're looking very tired, Ant.
No. I'm going to hit you with two more questions. I'm not tired. I'm more... It's frustrating not having the answers because, you know, neither of us have. But let me hit you with two more questions. Let me pull it back to creativity, right? Because in your journey, in your individual journey, you've done loads of stuff. We've talked about directing films and music videos, and you've worked with an Iraqi heavy metal band. What's the work that you see out there today that you think that work really excites me? What's the kind of work that you would love to be doing, or you think that once we change things and we bring more Indigenous folk into the creative industries, what are the kinds of outcomes, creative outcomes that we could be seeing?
I would like to see more Indigenous. There's actually two questions there, so I'll start with the latter question. I would like to see more Indigenous kids involved in the work that the public sees through the creative process in agency land. Make sense?
It does, but does that mean you'd like to see more Indigenous kids involved in making a CommBank TV ad,
correct,
for example?
Correct. And I'm not so much talking about the production side, because there's already some Aboriginal creative houses doing that. I'm more talking about the copywriting. I'm more talking about... the conceptual creative. I'm more talking about the strategy. I'm more talking about coming up with the big idea, which is what you do. I'm learning how to come up with the big idea, being shown how to come up with the big idea.
And bringing their perspective
and
to
bringing
that
their
idea.
Perspective. So I'd like to see more of that. Me personally, that's a really, really, really good question. I'm at a nice little... crossroads in my career at the moment. I'm starting to get itchy feet to get back on a film set, but I want to keep where I am, and I also want to come up with the big idea. I want to be in the room to be able to share ideas. I don't even know what the time is now, but I imagine we've been going at this for an hour now. But to me, that's what you want. You want to be in a room and you want to be able to talk and bounce ideas and be honest. Again, at the start, you said... be direct. You know, I'm a bit concerned about that state being direct, but this has been a very direct and honest conversation, and look where it's ended up. So I personally would like to be one of those people in the room as well, to be heard and to come up with the idea and have that idea pulled apart and pulled around and someone like yourself, Kirky, well, what about, have you thought of this? Boom, boom. Oh, shit, I haven't.
Yeah, we're creative people, right? That's exactly. Kind of what I love to do. That's why I love this industry. Sitting in a room with creative people. Is it not this, that? Oh, no, that's shit. Oh, that's good.
Let's break that down. Let's drill down a bit further.
That's
where I would like all this to go. Happens in other countries. It certainly happens in the UK, and it certainly happens in the US. Not so much Canada, but and certainly happens in New Zealand. We're just a bit behind here in certain things.
All right, last one, last question, right?
I'll stretch it out a long, long answer.
This is
for you,
give us
get
a
ready. Go well, get a cup it, of it coffee, could, people
be,
at
it
home.
It could be long, it could be short. Oh, actually, before we even do that, I do want to say, because we've raised a bunch of really important subjects on this, I'm hoping you're going to get a ton of emails. Peter Kirk on social media. You're out there. All they need to do is LinkedIn or whatever.
I take offense to what you said. I care.
And maybe I'll get a bunch of emails as well. But anyone who wants to have those conversations, you're out there
absolutely.
And obviously ready to have those conversations.
Pretty easy to find.
Reach out to you.
Please do.
How I end all of these things is by asking the guests, is there one kind of thought or insight or experience or an anecdote or a neat little quote or one little life lesson maybe that you could leave us with?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
It's a story.
It's a story. It's an antidote story. You mentioned the film that I directed a couple of years ago.
Hello Forever.
It's on there everywhere.
It's on Amazon, right?
On Amazon Prime and all. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. I shot that in the Philippines. I flew over as part of the production, and I'm not going to mention their names, a first AD and a producer from Australia. They actually ran off in the middle of the night. Okay, three or four days in, they walked off the production. I never saw them again. I've never seen them since. Before they left, there was a lot of pushing and pulling, frustration, angst. Things just weren't gelling. Now, I'm not saying they were dysfunctional. They weren't. They're just
creatively or logistically or
everything.
Right.
Okay. They just weren't gelling. There just wasn't flow, and there just wasn't, didn't feel like we were getting anywhere. Anyway, they left the production. Once they left, we started working with a producer from Africa and a producer from the Philippines, and the process was absolutely joyful and beautiful. Now, arcing that back to this whole conversation is things might be better when we start bringing in people with a different voice. You're opening your computer again, which means I might have another question.
No, it's just because I am going back to that Morrissey quote. Right. Morrissey was saying diversity can't possibly be a strength if everyone has ideas that will never correspond because everyone ultimately prefers their own race. And you seem to be agreeing with him.
But no, I'm not agreeing with him.
What you're saying is an example of why he's such a dick, and that's completely wrong.
No, I'm not agreeing with him. I brought in another way of thinking and another voice and another two completely different cultures.
Mm.
And that was one of the most joyful, challenging, creative things I've ever done in my life. So if people are scared or people are thinking it's just too unknown to work with the Indigenous people out there, I would argue, well, you don't, until you've tried it, you don't even know. So that's my little story.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Okay.
It's brilliant.
So does that hark back to the Morrissey quote
it does.
Now?
Well, it does. I think it proves how wrong he was. Yeah. You brought in an African AD and a Filipino
producer.
Yeah. And an indigenous director.
And it was beautiful, and it was creative, and it was challenging, and it was hard. And the film itself, I'm exceptionally proud of it. And before that, we had two traditional people that come out of AFTERS, and they had a particular way of doing things that didn't work or didn't gel for this environment. And then when they left, this beautiful creativity, magic, just all started happening. And I wasn't even driving that. I was just along for the ride, and I needed to just hang on for God's sakes, and hopefully we can get to the end. But the process was wonderful. So yeah, you kind of got to do it, reach out to the Indigenous population to realise how much of an untapped talent and skill set is available. But to do it, you've got to be willing to do it.
Yeah, it's a leap into the unknown, I guess. I think some of the questions I've asked you today are a little bit the theme, or the sort of the question behind the question was, oh, what if it doesn't work? Or I'm not sure. Are they going to be able to X, Y, Z?
I don't have a crystal ball.
You've got to take that loop, and then you're going to. But then also, you're going to find out things. You know, don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. And again, you're taking the mindset that a lot of people take in the ad game. You're taking, oh, what if it doesn't work? We've failed. I'm like, well, you haven't fucking failed. You've tried.
Yeah.
That hasn't worked. Then you readjust and you reset, and you get back in a room and you go again. So you're the quint. That what you just said is the mindset of 90% of the ad population. Oh, if it doesn't work, it's a failure. If it doesn't work, it just doesn't work. I don't understand that creative people think like that, because there is no failing. There is just, well, we'll try another way.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do another thing. Particularly you as an ECD, I find that quite weird.
Well, it's like that Nelson Mandela famous quote. He says, I never lose, I ever win, or I learn something.
Of course, of course. So, I mean, probably you need to have a look at yourself in a mirror and I've got to change my mindset to go, well, you know what, if we get a young Indigenous fella or girl in and they leave after 3 months, then okay, well, it just didn't work out, but that just happened, so we'll get back in a room, we'll reset, and we'll go again, and blah, 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 blah. And maybe that's where this podcast needed to end up, in a wacky kind
I know this, that for a supposedly creative industry, driven industry, the advertising industry is the most risk-averse, and I include myself right at the start, the most risk-averse industry on the planet, you know. We'll find a formula, we'll find a way of doing things, and we'll do that. That's, you know, that's the way it is.
Well, maybe that needs to change.
But maybe we can change it.
Yeah, I mean, take the mindset out from failing to having a go, having a crack, you know. And believe me, you'll learn so much more by even starting than sitting there going, well, what if we fuck up? What if it stops? What if it goes pear-shaped? What if this? What if that? I mean, there's 1,000 fucking what ifs in life. I'm going to ask you a question to end.
Go on, mate.
To end.
Go on.
So you've always worked in big agencies. You've gone out on your shop now. You've set up a big you've driven teams.
No, it's not a big agency. No,
you've driven teams. I've seen the work you did at Havas around the whole diversity thing, and it's beautiful work, mind you, I must say. Where to next for you?
Oh, bloody hell. You've turned the tables.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to end on a positive.
That was a positive. Yeah, right. Now you got me talking about me. Where am I going next? I mean, I want to keep this conversation going with you, with other people, about how do we make the industry a richer, broader, more open place. You know, like I just said, it's quite a conservative industry for an industry that's supposed to be creative, and I want to change that in myself and the industry. And the way I think to do that, for me anyway, I think is outside of big agencies, you know, which is why I think doing your own thing, starting my own agency, it's just given me an opportunity to, you know, to do things in a way that I think is different and better to the way the rest of the industry is going. I do, like I said to you before, think that the power sits in the hands of the big network agencies, and getting those guys to change is a big deal. But it does also mean that me, in my own small way, can start to do things the way I think's right and make my own sort of little difference, you know, through these conversations, through the way my agency works. And hopefully lots of people can get involved, can, you know, be on that journey of this change. And, you know,
perhaps you can set up your own scholarship at some point.
I would love to be in that room with you. I'm sure we can have that conversation. So I look forward to it.
Okay,
mate.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you so much for being on.
I pushed too many buttons.
Yeah, I think there's been all sorts of buttons. Yeah. Thank you.
I don't deliberately mean to do it. I don't. It's not deliberate. It's, you can't have an honest discussion about this unless you're prepared to have an honest discussion about this. And anyone can bounce along the top, but, you know, anyway. And we've all got a lot to learn. We've all got, you know, we've just got to come together as a motherfucking country and just really have a look at who we are and where we want to go. And Australia's in a really funny place right now. It's in a bizarre place of the old and the new, and the old doesn't want to let go, and the new kind of doesn't really know how to step in and where to step in, and everyone's pretty comfortable. And I've never seen Australia in more of a bizarre, and I'm 50. I've never seen Australia in more of a bizarre place than what I see right now.
So, Kirky, we had a positive ending there, and now you've taken us to a bizarre...
Bizarre's... Yeah. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Hey. All right. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, Ed.
Awesome.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.